Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. South African activists sue for same-gender couple pension rights, a U.S. federal court supports Florida's ban on gay and lesbian parenting, and a South Asian queer film festival breaks ground and builds images. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Brian Nunes.
And I'm Kelly Blanchfield.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 1st, 2001. South Africa's Lesbian and Gay Equality Project has filed a class action lawsuit against their government to gain pension rights for surviving same-gender partners of deceased gay and lesbian civil servants. The group turned to the courts only after 2 years of negotiations failed to win the point. They believe there are about 100,000 partnered gay and lesbian government workers. One of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit against Finance Minister Trevor Manuel and two government pension funds is Don Lambrecht, who says he was not only denied the pension of his late partner of 38 years, but was treated with great disrespect in the process. The case could be heard in the Pretoria High Court as early as September 25th. South Africa's 1996 constitution was the first in the world to explicitly require equal treatment for gays and lesbians, and private pension funds there have been required by national law to recognize gay and lesbian partners since 1999.
In Canada, there was a victory this week for gay and lesbian co-parents in British Columbia. A provincial human rights tribunal ruled in favor of two Victoria lesbian couples in which the non-biological mothers sought to be registered on the birth certificates of babies their partners bore by artificial insemination. The tribunal noted that the Provincial Vital Statistics Agency never made any inquiry into the biological status of men to be listed as fathers. It ruled that by denying the registration, the agency was illegally discriminating on the basis of sex, sexual orientation, and family status. Until now, BC gays and lesbians had to legally adopt their partner's children to gain parental status. Although the finding for the lesbian couples was limited to cases in which an anonymous sperm donor was used, the tribunal also ordered the agency to review all of its regulations and act to eliminate any bias against non-biological co-parents.
In the Czech Republic, more than 68,000 Catholics have signed a petition opposing a bill to establish legal registered partnerships that would extend a number of marital rights to gay and lesbian couples. Czech bishops believe the partnerships would confuse young people wrestling with their sexual identities, as well as damage the special status of heterosexual marriage. Religious conservatives have defeated two previous national bills for registered partnerships. A recent poll found 41% of Czechs supported legal recognition of same-gender couples, while 33% opposed them.
In the U.S., Washington's state Supreme Court, in an 8-1 ruling last week, upheld Vancouver's extension of spousal health benefits to the partners of the city's gay and lesbian employees. The state high court found that the city policy did not infringe on the state legislature's power to regulate familial relationships or violate a Washington law restricting legal marriage to heterosexual couples, and even recognized the city's need to establish the benefits to stay competitive as an employer. The legal challenge to the benefits was brought on behalf of a Vancouver resident by the Virginia-based North Star Legal Foundation, an anti-gay group which previously failed in a similar challenge to domestic partner benefits in Broward County, Florida. North Star's lead attorney, Jordan Lawrence, admitted the Washington High Court ruling probably marked an end to such challenges in that state. At least three other Washington cities and one county offer domestic partner benefits, and in the wake of the ruling, more are expected to follow suit.
Some 600,000 gay and lesbian couples declared themselves to the U.S. Census last year. Most gay and lesbian activists are convinced this is still a serious undercount, possibly representing less than a third of U.S. same-gender couples. But they were pleased at the census finding that gay and lesbian couples live in more than 99% of the nation's counties, not just in and around a few major cities. The census found nearly equal numbers of lesbian and gay couples. The religious right emphasized that the same-gender couples represented less than 1% of U.S. households in the census. As the census analysis continues, more detailed demographic information about the couples will become available.
Also in the U.S., California's official political ethics watchdog has given a rare favorable twist to the lack of marriage rights there for gays and lesbians. While legally married elected officials are required by California's Political Reform Act to abstain from votes on issues that might affect their spouses' incomes, the state's Fair Political Practices Commission decided that rule does not apply to gay and lesbian officials' domestic partners. The question had been put to the commission by openly gay Arvin City Council member Robert Brennan, whose partner is in the insurance business. Arvin Mayor Juan Olivares had criticized Brennan's possible conflicts of interest, but agreed to stop in light of the ruling.
Also in California, a jury this week awarded a whopping $945,000 to a lesbian who claimed sexual orientation discrimination in her firing from the San Jose police force. Former officer Don Goodman had experienced anxiety attacks when performing strip searches of suspects, but when she sought guidance from her sergeant, he asked if she was aroused sexually by searching women. He started an internal affairs investigation against her, leading to a letter of reprimand for willfully disobeying orders to perform searches, a charge she denies. She first complained to the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, and then filed a lawsuit and claims her ensuing dismissal after 7 years' service was retaliatory. She also charged that her superiors had failed to intervene to stop verbal harassment and rumors by her coworkers. San Jose's city attorney said he'll seek to have the judgment overturned and the case retried.
The legislature of the Mexican state of Chiapas has unanimously adopted a new penal code, including protections for gays and lesbians. Article 205 punishes crimes against the dignity of persons, which consists of incitation to hate or violence, vexation or exclusion of a group of people, negation or restriction of a group of people, and negation or restriction of employment rights, based on sexual orientation and a dozen other protected categories. Of Mexico's 32 states, only Aguascalientes and the Mexico City Federal District prohibit sexual orientation discrimination.
Hearings continued in Egypt this week in the unprecedented case of 52 men arrested in May on a gay-inclusive riverboat club. The men, who have been in detention ever since their arrest, could face up to 3 years in prison if convicted of practicing debauchery with men. From behind bars at the courthouse, one told a reporter that police had used whips to force them to be quiet and to say they were gay. Prosecutors told the court that such debauchery constitutes contempt of the Islamic faith, while 10 character witnesses described the alleged ringleader in the case as a devout Muslim. One defense attorney said that the prosecution's 900 photos allegedly showing defendants in indecent positions actually portray only 5 of the 52 men accused. Another defense attorney claimed to have medical reports proving that 37 of the defendants are not gay. Defense attorneys continued to ask that the case be transferred out of the National Security Court where it's being tried, a court from which there is no appeal. While Egyptian human rights groups have not supported the defendants, representatives from the Belgian, Canadian, Danish, Swiss, and U.S. embassies attended this week's hearings. The next court date is September 5th.
Former world heavyweight boxing champ Lennox Lewis came to blows with current champ Haseem Rahman during a televised interview this week promoting their rematch, thinking Rahman had previously said he was gay. "Why did you say I was gay? I'm not gay," the angry Lewis demanded. Rahman responded that he'd said Lewis had been acting gay by going to court to ensure he'd be the first challenger Rahman faced after Rahman took Lewis' title with a knockout in South Africa. When Lewis offered to prove his heterosexuality with Rahman's sister, both leaped to their feet and, after a few shoves, wrestled briefly on the floor. While several major media outlets covered the tussle, none commented on the use of gay as a slur.
Australia's sports ministry this week issued guidelines against homophobic discrimination and harassment both on and off the playing field. Veteran gay activist Rodney Croom welcomed the guidelines, hoping they would end the locker room legitimization of gay bashing and increase participation in sports by gay and lesbian youth. But openly gay Australian Democratic Party Senator Brian Gregg of West Australia noted that the guidelines include a misleading statement that the laws of the nation and all of the states protect against sexual orientation discrimination, when in fact there is no such law in his home state or nationally. He called it hypocrisy for the coalition government to issue those guidelines, while opposing his own party's bill for federal civil rights protections for gays and lesbians.
And finally, the governor of the island of Lesbos this week suggested that visiting lesbians should be segregated. The Greek island was the home of the ancient lesbian poet Sappho, and its name is the basis for the word lesbian. But Governor Dimitris Vounatsos said They express themselves publicly in front of children and families on the beach or eating at seaside restaurants. Let's say they can do whatever they like, but in a fenced-off area. He further recommended the income realized from lesbian spending be used to develop tourism. Greek gay activist and journalist Grigoris Valianatos responded in a TV interview that gays in Greece no longer belong in the zoo. They are free and enjoy rights. It is Mr. Vounatsos who would be at home in a zoo.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 1st, 2001, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Kelly Blanchfield.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
A federal judge in Miami this week upheld Florida's ban on gays and lesbians becoming adoptive parents, a decision supported by brother of the president and governor, Jeb Bush. The ruling comes after the state announced it would try to rescind the foster care contract it has with a gay man in Oregon, who's the lead plaintiff in the case. Susan Gage reports from Tallahassee.
Stephen Lofton has cared for a 10-year-old boy as a foster parent since the child was a baby. The Oregon man wants to adopt the boy, but Florida law prohibits gays and lesbians from becoming adoptive parents. Lofton and others filed suit against the ban in a Miami federal court more than 2 years ago, but U.S. District Court Judge James Lawrence King has tossed out the case. King accepted the state's argument that married heterosexuals provide children with a more stable home. Lisa Gates, a spokeswoman for Governor Jeb Bush, says the chief executive stands by the court's decision.
Governor Bush agrees with the ruling of the court, upholding the law passed by the Florida legislature. You know, the court has said today that that the Florida law considers the best interest of the children, and that's what we'll continue to do.
And so the argument from the other side, though, is...
That's it. That's all I got for you.
That's all you're going to say?
That's all I got for you, Susan.
Florida is the only state that prohibits any gay or lesbian from becoming an adoptive parent. Mississippi bans same-sex couples from adopting children, while Utah won't allow non-married couples to adopt. Advocates for the gays and lesbians involved in the Florida suit expressed outrage and disappointment in the court's action. Matt Coles is the director of the ACLU's Lesbian and Gay Rights Project. He says as the law stands now in Florida, child abusers and drug addicts are free to adopt children, while gay and lesbian people are specifically shut out of the process. Coles says the assertion that growing up in a home with a straight couple is better for children makes no sense in light of the facts in the Lofton case.
The question isn't whether John Doe, the 10-year-old in this case, or John Rowe, the 9-year-old in this case, should be raised by the people who've raised them since they were infants, or some heterosexual couple. The state of Florida doesn't have any heterosexual couple ready to adopt these kids. The choice here is between being raised by a loving lesbian or gay couple who everybody agrees is providing a good home and is perfectly capable of providing a good home, or not having a home at all, and spending your childhood getting bounced from temporary placement to temporary placement to temporary placement. This case has nothing to do with adoption by married couples. Indeed, in Florida statewide today, 25% of all adoptions are to single people. And in Miami-Dade, 40% of all adoptions are to single people. You can adopt if you're single in Florida, just not if you're lesbian or gay.
Cole says the attorneys for Stephen Lofton plan to ask the judge to reconsider his ruling in the case. Meanwhile, there's a chance the state will begin proceedings to remove the 10-year-old boy from Lofton's home, the only home the boy has known since infancy. For This Way Out, this is Susan Gage in Tallahassee.
While Judge King was deciding in Miami that children are better off with heterosexual parents, members of the American Psychological Association meeting in San Francisco were hearing about new research that clearly indicates the opposite. The results of the Johnson & O'Connor National Survey of Gay and Lesbian Parents found that sexual orientation is totally irrelevant to good child outcomes. In fact, according to researcher Nanette Silverman, the data suggests lesbian and gay parents are more responsive, child-oriented, and egalitarian than their heterosexual counterparts. The psychologists expressed more concern about the stress experienced by lesbian and gay would-be supermoms and dads than about the welfare of the children in their care.
Hola amigos, this is Luis Alfaro, performance artist, playwright.
This is Monica Palacios, Aztec God, Fajita Combo. You're listening to This Way Out,
the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Where is the real movie capital of the world? And where can you see its gay and lesbian exports? We'll answer those questions later in the program. Whether or not human rights are on the official agenda at the British Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in October in Brisbane, Australia, such issues will be on the minds of many observers around the world. British queer activist Peter Tatchell of the nonviolent direct action group Outrage tells Queer Radio's John Frame why he'll be there.
Yes, I'm planning to arrive in Brisbane at the beginning of October in order to pursue my quest to have President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe arrested on charges of torture and other human rights abuses. The Commonwealth Summit is an opportunity to put Mugabe's human rights abuses on the public agenda and to pressure Commonwealth leaders from all over the world to stop appeasing this blatant tyrant and dictator. The appeasement pursued by Western government has only led to his human rights abuses getting worse, not better. There's no doubt that Mugabe has begun his big anti-gay crusade at a time when the economy has been spiraling into decline, when people are discontent with rising food and fuel prices, and the failure of his land reform program. So in many ways, I think he has used the gay issue as a way of diverting public attention away from the failings and abuses of his own regime. It's a convenient scapegoat, like Jews were in the Nazi era. You know, the Nazis used the Jews as a way of, you know, deflecting people's anger and resentment onto an identifiable, scapegoatable minority. We've seen some pretty horrendous things done. I mean, gay and lesbian people have been beaten up, arrested, framed on trumped-up charges, threatened with death. But, of course, this is just part of a pattern of wider human rights abuses where all sections of civil society are under attack by the Mugabe regime. Mugabe's attacks on the lesbian and gay community in Zimbabwe are very bizarre. Looking at the country, there are plenty more important problems to deal with than the issue of homosexuality, which, of course, from our point of view, isn't a problem at all anyway. But even if you thought it was a problem, I mean, compared to soaring inflation and unemployment, the semi-starvation being experienced by millions of landless rural peasants, I mean, homosexuality pales into insignificance. There is no doubt whatsoever that in many of the Commonwealth countries still penalize consensual homosexual behavior, the laws on those statute books were imposed by the British colonial rulers. And I find it deeply ironic that a so-called anti-colonialist like Robert Mugabe is all too eager to accept, incorporate, and enforce the British colonial laws against homosexuality. You know, he says that homosexuality is un-African. He says it's an import from the West. Well, hang on. There's plenty of anthropological and historical research that shows that homosexuality existed in Africa long before any white person ever set foot there, and that in many African societies, it was either tolerated or in some cases even accepted and venerated as a part of indigenous African culture. So the real import to Africa is not homosexuality, but homophobia. And it's incredibly ironic that Robert Mugabe is embracing this Western construct of anti-gay hatred in order to defend what he thinks is authentic African culture. It just isn't true.
Next time on This Way Out, British queer activist Peter Tatchell goes into more depth about his crusade against Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe and the relationship between the gay and lesbian fight for equality and other human rights struggles. Homosexuality hasn't gained much acceptance in India, and images of gays and lesbians of South Asian descent on the big screen have been rare. But the tide is slowly turning in both the social and cinematic arenas, as This Way Out's Brian Goebel discovered at a groundbreaking South Asian Gay and Lesbian Film Festival being held this weekend in San Francisco.
Films are the record we leave behind, and it's really important for people to be able to see themselves in film.
India produces more films than any other country. Bollywood, the Bombay-based film industry, has an audience of more than 1 billion people worldwide. Many are epic films of romance, song, and dance. Indian cinema, however, is hard-pressed to break away from its mold of song and dance and delve into subjects still considered taboo in Indian society, like portrayals of gays and lesbians.
Even in my fantasies, I keep editing myself out. It's like, where am I and where are the other men of color?
We're still where Hollywood was, let's say, even 10 years ago.
Riyad Wadia is an independent film director who made India's first openly gay film.
There has really not been any concerted portrayal of gay and lesbian images in Bollywood films, except for a few instances in what would be more art house films from Bollywood, where there have been sensitive characters kind of shown, but never really underlined in a very clear manner that, okay, this, you know, man is gay or this woman is lesbian.
If one were to use the Kinsey scale of 10% of the population, that would mean 55 million Indian men are exclusively homosexual. But gay sex is banned under Article 377 of the Indian Penal Code.
My fantasies? Well, they're delicious, like secrets. They're only for myself. I never tell.
It is a very difficult life. Obviously, the smallest unit in India is not the individual, is the family. And by that definition, the family has to maintain its hold on society by saying, no, you cannot have your individual rights to express yourself, either through your sexuality or through, you know, other issues. You must maintain the family. Procreation is still very strong as a passion for moving society forward. What happens is a lot of Indian men fall into marriages, have children, or, you know, have very, very failed marriages. And the sad thing in that is not just about what happens to the individual who is a homosexual, but it's also for the woman who is trapped in a marriage, obviously, that is not going to be satisfying.
Gay life is changing in India and for Indians who live elsewhere.
But we are changing some things. You know, recreating our fantasies puts us in the picture, starting from what turns us on.
Lately, maybe in the last 10 years or so, there has been much more of a gay identity developing.
Sandeep Roy is the editor of Trikone magazine, a publication for gays and lesbians of South Asian descent.
Right now, almost every city in India, major city, has a gay group, and a lot of them, there's 3 or 4 magazines coming out. There's a huge number of internet groups. And so there's groups like Gay Bombay and Gay Calcutta, and they have offices, and they're, you know, starting to deal with the governments as legitimate non-governmental organizations. So in a way, I think if you were growing up gay in India today, you would have far more access to resources than if you were growing up 10 years ago. You know, there's even like a couple of bars and clubs.
But because of the repressed nature of gay and lesbian Indians, most have been left starved for something more than veiled images in literature and film. Wadia's 1996 film, Bomgay, was banned in India, but it was truly groundbreaking. The entire film, which is a series of 6 short films, was shot in Bombay.
It's really about Bombay's gay society. I had a friend of mine in 94 when I came out. It seemed a great time to be out because suddenly everywhere I looked and went, being gay was celebratory. Maybe it was just my own personal experience of wanting to come out. And when I came out with a bang in India, both by the fact that I came out to the national media and I came out to my parents and society, all pretty much within the first 3 months of all this. So in that period, we used to go around really being quite obnoxious around town, really trying to provoke people at every given twist and turn. And at that phase, this friend of mine said to me, darling, this is not Bombay, this is Bomgay. Look at all the gay men everywhere you go. It's just gay, gay, gay.
The short films in Bombay are a candid glimpse at gay life in India, set to the poetry of India's openly gay poet, R. Raj Rao. One of the films is called Underground and depicts the secret lives of Indian men who seek out sex in shadowy places.
Underground is where you belong. While the city buzzes overhead, goes shit on your tongue. You undress underground and find your Garden of Eden. Eden gardens abounding in Adams and serpents.
Underground, it really moved me because having gone through in my closet years the rounds of tea room sex, which would be going into bathrooms in public places and, you know, trying to find someone and all that kind of thing, which is very sordid on one level, exciting on another. The poem really spoke about how we have to subvert ourselves as gay individuals when we are trying to seek what is the essence of being gay, which is the act of homosexuality. And that subversion leads to pleasure, and that pleasure then becomes the standard by which you lead your life. And Underground talks about that.
Bombay and several other films, both new and old, were recently shown at a film festival sponsored by Tricone that was the first of its kind in North America. Sandeep Roy is also the organizer of the first annual South Asian Gay Film Festival held in San Francisco.
These films have kind of piled up over the years without people always being aware that all this stuff is out there. What we hope is that this festival, by bringing it all together, is going to make people realize that in terms of films, we're not completely invisible, that we do leave celluloid tracks.
As I was walking down the street, this man yells at me, "Hey, Puri." I turn around. He stares at me with his big brown eyes, smiling with his pearly white teeth, dressed in red suspenders, black t-shirt, blue jeans and white sneakers, pointing his half-eaten corn on the cob at me, slabs it with butter. He says, "Hey, baby, have a bite."
The response to the film festival, also called Queer Filmistan, has been overwhelming.
People have been very excited about it. We've had people write from places in London, people wanting to know what's going to be shown, as well as filmmakers. We've also had a lot of people who are students in film schools or people who are in India saying, "Oh, I have this script for a film, a gay film set in India." It's really exciting that this idea of a film festival suddenly makes people, you know, realize that, oh my goodness, there is a place that I can show this work.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goble in San Francisco.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Brian Nunes, Kelly Blanchfield, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambage, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, Susan Gage, Brian Goble, and John Frame contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's critical financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KSUA Fairbanks, Alaska, WFCS New Britain, Connecticut, 5RRR Woomera, South Australia, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please stay tuned.